The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and welcome to today's episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood, I'm the Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited. And Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. It's also broadcast right across the Canterbury region on Plains Media and through the Wairarapa on Arrow FM. Well, today we've got Climate Matters number 148, and it's in a different form. It's a response by me to two statements by the Prime Minister, which you'll hear very shortly. And it's in the form of a letter to the Prime Minister. So I'm going to read it more as a narrative than usual. And I just would say that it has evoked a full-on response from readers. And the full-on response is all supportive. So anyway, let's get into Climate Matters number 148. It was issued for your information on the 12th of March. So this broadcast will be a few weeks late, and that'll help you put it into time context. The heading is, Dear Prime Minister, who do you think you're fooling? Dear Mr. Luxon, I realise you weren't welcome trying to deal with this on top of all the fallout from the ghastly Iranian conflict. However, the rest of us don't want to deal with the fallout from your government's ill-advised climate policies on top of everything else. And like in COVID, we can't park climate action while we deal with the immediate emergency. So I'm writing to you on what you have just been saying about future generations and about your perception of your understanding of the economy, and in particular, energy and the economy, minerals and the economy, water and the economy, gravel and the economy, the climate crisis and the economy, and the economy and the economy. Bizarrely, while leading a government racing backwards on almost every climate strategy it can lay its hands on, you have just claimed, the only thing I'm considering is the future of our kids and grandkids, and that's why I came to politics. And the first of about 15 links will be there, and that one is to Newsroom. All the links are necessary to illustrate the points I'm making. Continuing. I want to believe you, Mr. Luxon, but might you, like the goons' getaway car on their great bank robbery, want us to think one thing when your intention is entirely different? You see, the goons' car had a radiator painted on the back, and their reason for it was so that everyone will think we are going the other way. Might you have us believe you are focused on a flourishing, long-term future for our kids and grandkids when you're actually intent on a swathe of government actions you know will put that future in increasing jeopardy? For our kids and grandkids to have a half-decent chance of a half-decent future, we need to rapidly implement robust and ambitious climate strategies. You have zero excuse for not understanding that. I know, because I and dozens of climate specialists have written to you personally on it, not to mention the Climate Change Commission advice your cabinet takes so lightly. It's also extraordinary that you still recite your years-old mantra that you understand the economy when the evidence doesn't support that at all, except charitably in a most myopic sense that belongs back in the last millennium. Wide boundary views of the relationship between energy and the economy, minerals and the economy, water and the economy, or even gravel and the economy. To say nothing of the climate crisis and the economy, or the economy and the economy, don't support your claims. They highlight that we are on a trajectory that is anything but compatible with your fixation on GDP growth, 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 and anything but compatible with a good future for our kids and grandkids. I want to quote to you, Prime Minister, from Nathan Surendran, and we will come to him in a minute. We face a choice, not between growth and decline, but between managed decline and chaotic decline. And the one we'll come to first is dealing with energy and the economy. Mr. Luxon, even without the current Iranian conflict, we simply won't have enough energy to do what you seem to think we'll do. Do check out the authoritative white paper called The Limits to the Energy Transition, What Physics Means for New Zealand's Economy, by Schema Consulting. That is the consultancy of Nathan Surendran, who I just mentioned. Here's another quote from that same report. The interaction between rising energy costs, declining soil fertility, climate disruption, and supply chain fragility is not a future scenario. It is a present reality. And I think it's worth saying that Nathan Surendran wrote that before the Iranian conflict had started. That's an important dimension. He wasn't reacting to the Iranian conflict. Continuing, for good measure, also check out here, and this is a link to another article, how our electricity sector is skewing the economy and screwing Kiwis in the process, and how dismally successive governments have responded to the evidence. Why don't you and Energy Minister Watts join the How Do We Reform the Electricity Market event on the 23rd of March at 5:30 p.m. And here's a link here in person, or another link to live stream it here. Both of those links will be in the Climate Matters webpage on the Fresh FM website. And do check out the economy and the economy item below for more on energy. Which brings us to minerals and the economy. And Mr. Luxon, our economy simply won't be able to access enough minerals to do what you seem to expect. Expert Simon Michaud has long sounded warnings about what he terms our mineral blindness, and the realities of his projections are becoming all too apparent. Have you heard, for example, the emerging alarming statistics for copper and silver globally? You can read here his paper, there'll be a link, of course, called Challenges and Bottlenecks for the Green Transition, published by the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe. That's not a bad pedigree, is it? The chart below is from that paper. Please note, it is just for one generation of the renewable transition. So I'm going to try and unpick the chart a little bit. It is a column chart with several columns. Each pair of columns is relating to a particular metal. So copper, nickel, lithium, cobalt, and vanadium. And the pairs of columns, the left-hand one is red, and that is an estimate of the total metal required of that particular metal to produce one generation of technology units to phase out fossil fuels. Now, just to clarify that, one generation is one nominal lifetime of wind turbines, solar panels, or what. So what we're finding is, and for every one of those metals, the red column, i.e. the demand that we need for that one generation, far outstrips every known resource of the metal on the planet. And in fact, bear in mind that in 25 or 30 years, when that particular piece of equipment needs replacing, we then have to do it all again with zero or less than zero resources. And if you want to, I'm going back to the letter to the Prime Minister. And for an insightful podcast with more experts who understand minerals and the economy, I recommend Nate Hagen's interview with Craig Tyndale and Michael Every. Which brings us to water and the economy. Mr. Luxon, I don't know if you've heard about the array of water crises around the world, but it might also be a struggle to get the water we want. You see, we've got our own massive infrastructure deficits and associated health, fiscal, and environmental risks. Maybe you've heard or read Radio New Zealand on this recently. and our largest city recently decided to recycle its wastewater as the least bad option. And also, please check out IT Brief on New Zealand's challenges servicing water to data centres. Across the ditch, Mr. Luxon, The Economy reports, that's the name of a publication, The Economy reports a Sydney backlash against data centres, which they call water-guzzling giants, that are projected to consume 25% of the city's water within 10 years. These are the data centres that are also pushing up the cost of electricity across the world and slowing the transition to renewable electricity. We reported on that in Climate Matters 146. By the way, Prime Minister, Climate Matters is free and fortnightly if you'd like to subscribe. Have you sorted all that in your head, Mr. Luxon? When last week you told the Financial Services Council leveraging AI is the key to boosting productivity and the economy. And just here's a quote out of that Economy magazine in Australia. A single 100 megawatt facility, that is a data center, a single 100 megawatt facility can consume up to 2 million litres a day, enough for 6,500 households. The agency warns such figures could double by 2030, turning water use into not just an industrial issue, but a climate-linked risk factor. There'll be a link to that article. And that brings us to gravel and the economy. Now, you can't get much more basic than gravel, can you? It's fundamental to the construction sector that is fundamental to the economy. For the new roads your government is infatuated with, for the potholes you think worthy of prime ministerial attention, and for the building sector too. But our extensive road network servicing our widely scattered population helps make us insatiable gravel consumers to the point we risk running short. And please see the Post article I'm linking to for that. The pie chart below gives us clues as to how much the gravel sector impacts our economy. And out of interest, New Zealand is the third largest consumer of aggregate per head of population in the world, largely due to those large road links servicing a small population. The pie chart I mentioned, just to describe it, it's divided into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 segments. All, half of all the aggregate and gravel goes to road building and road maintenance. About 20% goes to making concrete, the aggregate and concrete. Eyeballing it, I'd say about 12% goes into building construction. And then a good chunk, 5%, goes to limestone for agriculture, and the other 15% is other. And now it's time for the climate crisis and the economy. We do need to discuss this, don't we, Mr. Luxon? You should know much of what follows, because with over 30 specialists, I wrote repeatedly to you and Minister Watts on these topics last year. Insurance and the economy. I can't imagine you follow Gunther Tallinger on LinkedIn, Prime Minister, because if you did, you would be pursuing totally different policy settings. You see, Tallinger is a director of insurance giant Allianz, has his finger on the risk pulse of the climate crisis. It's part of what he posted last year on LinkedIn. The math breaks down. The premiums required exceed what people or companies can pay. This is already happening. Entire regions are becoming uninsurable. This is a systemic risk that threatens the very foundation of the financial sector. If insurance is no longer available, other financial services become unavailable too. No bank will issue loans for uninsurable property. Credit markets freeze. This applies not only to housing, but to infrastructure, transportation, agriculture, and industry. Markets will reprice rapidly and brutally. This is what a climate-driven market failure looks like. Bear in mind that was written by a director of one of the world's biggest insurance companies. Perhaps, Mr. Luxon, you understand brutally, because that has been a hallmark of many of your government's policies. Now to deep ocean circulation and the economy. You may recall that the collapse of the massive deep circulation system, the AMOC, that is the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, is one of almost 20 critical climate tipping points we definitely don't want to cross. The AMOC includes the Gulf Stream that keeps northern Europe from freezing up and removes some of the overheating from the southern hemisphere. That's our hemisphere, Prime Minister. When we wrote to you last year, the signs weren't good, and now they are worse. Here's an update from the New Scientist. This is an extract from it. A gradual northward shift in the Gulf Stream has provided more evidence that the systems of currents that keeps Europe warm is weakening. What's more, modelling suggests that any abrupt shift in the Gulf Stream could signal an imminent catastrophic collapse in the ocean current. Bear in mind, that's what stops northern Europe from freezing terribly through its winters. And not to be left out, our hemisphere has its own connected system, the Antarctic Abyssal Overturning Circulation. Oh, that's a name, isn't it? Also massive, also critical to global ecosystems and climate, and also in decline. In the last 30 years, the British Antarctic Survey tells us, and I'm quoting from it, the volume of these bottom waters shrunk by more than 20%, while the rest of deep waters deeper than 2,000 metres has been warmed at a rate four times higher than the rest of the global ocean. End quote. This, Prime Minister, should scare the pants off any remote economy based on agriculture, not to mention fishing and wine and tourism and lots more. Quoting again, these results, this is from the British Antarctic Survey, these results show just how sensitive this region is, specifically the Antarctic Abyssal Overturning Circulation, which is a key regulator of global climate. And now it's the turn of investment in climate responses and the economy. You'll recall, Prime Minister, us highlighting to you this time last year the major report from the massive Boston Consulting Group working with Cambridge University. Boston's related press release is, the economic case for climate investment is clear, but not broadly understood. It seems, Mr. Luxon, you're intent on demonstrating the validity of the second half of that title, not broadly understood. Quoting from it, there is a strong case for investing in climate mitigation and adaptation based on the severe economic consequences of failure alone. The main report, and we'll give a link to that, goes into considerable detail, including five key barriers to climate action. The first is that the political discussion often overlooks the economic case for action. Does that sound familiar, Mr. Luxon? Now we come to the economy and the economy. I haven't heard you discuss that we run an energy economy, not a monetary one, Prime Minister. In fact, a surplus energy one. Do you understand that? Or that debt is ultimately a claim on future surplus energy? Have a think about that in the context of the limits to the energy transition and challenges and bottlenecks for the green transition, the papers I've referenced above. And you could do worse, Prime Minister, than take Minister Willis and do a deep dive together into the posts of seasoned economics researcher Dr. Tim Morgan. Come to think of it, Morgan only does deep, 319 times and counting at surplus energy economics. And, Mr. Luxon, you will be interested in post 319. It's entitled The End of Growth. As I said at the start, Mr. Luxon, I want to believe you when you say the only thing I'm considering is the future of our kids and grandkids. In fact, I want very much to believe you because if what I think you mean is what you mean, you must realize that you are trying to steer our national wokka in entirely the wrong direction and that we urgently need to change course. So if you mean it, please tell us again, with my clarification inserted, the only thing I'm considering is achieving a flourishing, long-term future for our kids and grandkids. But don't ever, ever try to fool us again by saying that you understand the economy. You can perhaps see why that evoked a lot of comment from readers. You can perhaps also see why I felt the need to put a lot of references through there to substantiate what I was saying. It's high time that the Prime Minister was called out on those things. I didn't enjoy doing it, but I do think it's essential that it is done. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Climate Matters. I do hope I have your company again next week. And as always, kia kaha for the climate. As you know, you're listening to Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.